Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Neonatal Review Isolette to the Crib. The purpose of this podcast, again, is to review high-yield common topics in neonatology, where our focus is geared towards the perinatal neonatal boards, but anybody interested in neonatology can find this podcast helpful. I will be your host. I am Dr. Julie Weiner, one of the neonatologists and the current medical director for the NICU here at Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City, Missouri. We're located in the Heartland, where we're known for our barbecue and, most recently, 2020 Super Bowl champs. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. To help prepare for boards, we have a collection of neonatologists to help us along the way. All have either passed boards, been there, done that, or are currently studying for boards. Same boat as you. Again, we are going to be joined today by Dr. Sharma, the other host for this podcast, who is the fellowship program director here at Children's Mercy Hospital. She was here with us last time discussing the definition, incidence, and classification of apnea of prematurity. Today, she is going to be discussing the pathogenesis of apnea of prematurity. All right, Dr. Sharma, tell everybody hi out there.
Hi there. How's everyone doing?
All right, everybody. As we get started, remember, take a sip of your caffeine, keep breathing, and we will get through this. All right, Dr. Sharma, let's head into today's topic, pathogenesis of apnea prematurity.
Okay, so welcome. This topic is much more involved, so some concentration will be needed. Therefore, caffeine will help. As we mentioned in the last podcast, apnea of prematurity is a developmental disorder that reflects physiological immaturity rather than a pathological process. To discuss the pathogenesis of apnea of prematurity, we need to go back to fetal life. So what happens in fetal life? Gas exchange occurs through the placenta, and the respiratory muscle activity is only intermittent. Then we transition to postnatal life after delivery, which requires continuous respiratory muscle activity to sustain gas exchange. The mechanism for transition from intermittent to continuous respiratory breathing is still not fully understood. It is thought that apnea of prematurity is due to disruption of the developmental ventilation control processes due to immaturity resulting in impaired respiratory drive and or the failure to maintain airway patency.
So it appears the respiratory drive is an important component of the pathogenesis of apnea prematurity. Can you kind of comment or describe that?
Dr. Weiner, you are correct. So let's talk more on respiratory drive. The central respiratory drive initiates inspiratory effort in response to changes in the arterial carbon dioxide and oxygen levels and the pH through input from both the neural and chemical receptors. So basically, the respiratory center in the brain integrates receptor input and transmits neuronal signals through efferent pathways to the respiratory muscles. So what happens in preterm infants? In preterm infants, the immaturity of breathing responses affects all levels of respiratory control, both central and peripheral chemosensitivity and the inhibitory pulmonary neuronal signal, which leads to impaired ventilatory response to hypercapnia and hypoxia.
So Dr. Sharma, can you tell us a little bit, how does the increase in your CO2 or hypercapnia lead to apnea prematurity? How is that related?
As you will see, a carbon dioxide level in the blood has an effect on the respiratory output. So the major driver, as I mentioned, of central respiratory output is actually increased carbon dioxide. This is sensed primarily through the brainstem receptors, but with a smaller contribution from the peripheral chemoreceptors in the carotid and aortic bodies. It's interesting to note that actually the preterm infants actually have a blunted ventilatory response to inhaled carbon dioxide. The responses to carbon dioxide is even lower in preterm infants with apnea compared to preterm control infants matched for gestational age and birth weight and postnatal age without apnea. So that's an interesting finding. This decreased ventilatory response at a given carbon dioxide level is primarily due to changes in central respiratory drive rather than the pulmonary mechanics. So I hope that clarifies how hypercapnia has an effect on apnea of prematurity.
Yes, Dr. Sharma, thank you. That really does help. So something you mentioned, how does the decrease in the PaO2 or hypoxia affect apnea prematurity?
So yes, that's true. Hypoxia also does affect apnea prematurity. So that's true. Hypoxia also affects apnea prematurity. So what happens that with increase in ventilation due to a response to hypoxia, increase in ventilation in response to hypoxia is dependent exclusively on feedback from the carotid bodies, body peripheral chemoreceptors, which are situated in the thorax. Interestingly, in preterm infants, actually, there is a biphasic response to hypoxia. There is an initial increase of hyperventilation and subsequent decrease in inspiratory effort, resulting in hypoventilation and apnea. This biphasic response to hypoxia in preterm infants can persist up to 38 weeks post-menstrual age. And this may be one of the reasons why there is persistence of apnea in some infants. In clinical practice, we do see sometimes patients continue to have apnea beyond 35, 36 weeks, and this may be one of the reasons. The other way that hypoxia affects apnea of prematurity is the decreased peripheral chemosensitivity in response to hypoxia may delay recovery from apnea. Low fetal oxygenation results in decreased fetal respiratory activity. The peripheral chemoreceptors, which are adapted to the low fetal oxygen levels, initially are unresponsive to the fourfold increase in oxygen levels at birth until a subsequent increase in their sensitivity to extrauterine oxygen levels. The underlying mechanism leading to this maturation is still unknown.
So Dr. Sharma, in addition to the effects of ventilation and oxygen, we also know that there are upper airway considerations such as patency. How does this affect apnea?
We have seen this in clinical practice, right? Upper airway obstruction does result in apnea. So patency of the upper airway is essential to the flow of respiratory gases between the environment and the alveolar capillary interface. There are many factors which result in upper airway obstruction in preterm infants. And this includes the collapse of the airway due to poor hypopharyngeal muscle tone, inhibitory upper airway reflexes. More common things are infections like viral infections or nasal obstruction. I think we need to kind of talk a little bit more about upper airway patency. The collapse of the upper airway due to poor hypopharyngeal muscle tone results in apnea. The maintenance of the upper airway patency is dependent on the resting tone and active contraction of the hypopharyngeal muscles. The hypopharyngeal muscles is actually a frequent site for upper airway obstruction in preterm infants because pharyngeal tone is poor, which results in airway collapse. And this actually especially happens during REM sleep in babies. The second entity that can result in upper airway obstruction is inhibitory upper airway reflexes. This is a little bit more complex, so hang in there with me. Activation of the inhibitory upper airway reflexes, also referred to as laryngeal chemoreflex, may contribute to the pathogenesis of apnea, although the mechanism is poorly understood. This reflex appears to be mediated through irritant receptors in the larynx. More commonly, prolonged hypopharyngeal suctioning or aspiration of small volumes of milk also may induce an apneic response, and this we have seen in clinical practice. However, it is important to note there is no temporal relationship being demonstrated between apnea of prematurity and GE reflux, which we'll discuss a little bit more later. The other factor, as we had discussed earlier, viral infections also have an effect on the upper airway patency and apnea. An example is actually RSV virus may enhance apneic response, which is a common manifestation of respiratory syncytial virus infection. In addition to that, upper airway respiratory infection may cause edema and obstruction of the airway. The other entity we talked about is nasal obstruction. Newborn infants depend on the patent nasal airway for adequate ventilation because neonates, as we all know, are obligate nasal breathers. Therefore, apnea may be precipitated by intermittent nasal obstruction from swelling that may occur in association with excessive suctioning during prolonged nasal CPAP or prolonged use of nasogastric tubes, which is not uncommon in the neonatal intensive care unit. Another factor that has an effect on the upper airway patency is laryngeal and tracheal anomalies. The larynx and trachea are less common sites of mechanical air obstruction, but mild obstruction caused by laryngeal edema, vocal cord dysfunction, tracheal stenosis, or laryngeal or tracheal malacia can precipitate apnea in some cases.
So Dr. Sharma, is there other things that can have an effect on apnea? Say, what about bilirubin levels?
Yes, you know, it's interesting. As you know, increased bilirubin is not an uncommon entity in our practice. And there is some limited data that suggests that unconjugated hyperbilirubinemia is associated with central apnea. And it's interesting that the proposed mechanism is that the unbound or the unconjugated bilirubin crosses the blood-brain barrier and results in brainstem dysfunction, which would decrease the respiratory drive in response to either hypercapnia or hypoxia. Yeah, I found this interesting.
I do too. I never thought the relationship between apnea and bilirubin before. Thank you. So as we've covered kind of the pathogenesis of apnea of prematurity and the complexity of this topic, can you just give us a quick summary to bring us kind of all centered back together on the pathogenesis?
Okay, to summarize pathogenesis of apnea of prematurity, it's important to realize that in premature infants, the immaturity of the breathing response affects all level of respiratory control, both central and peripheral chemosensitivity and the inhibitory pulmonary neuronal signal. This in turn results in a blunted ventilatory response to inhaled carbon dioxide and a biphasic response to initial hyperventilation and subsequent hypoventilation to hypoxia. I just want to point out, it is important to know this fact because this is something that can appear on your boards. Upper airway patency is essential for flow of respiratory gas exchange. Factors that are associated with upper air obstruction leading to apnea include collapse of the airway due to hyperpharyngeal muscle tone, inhibitory upper airway reflexes, viral infection, nasal obstruction, laryngeal and tracheal anomalies. Hopefully, a complex topic on pathogenesis of apnea, I've been able to summarize it for you and increase your knowledge in this area.
Thank you, Dr. Sharma. Hopefully, this information will give everyone out there a better understanding of the pathogenesis of apnea of prematurity. This is Neonatology Review, Isolate to Crib. I'm Dr. Julie Weiner. Thank you for listening, and please join us next time where we will talk about the management of apnea of prematurity with Dr. Sharma.